Working in the arts, whether music, movies, theatre or other art forms, more often than not involves a collaborative process, even if individual names can sometimes take all the glory. Previously, Sarah Kenny has looked at costume designer Edith Head and the essential role she played in the movies of Alfred Hitchcock. She's also looked at the American composer John Cage and his great collaborations with choreographer Merce Cunningham. Tonight, Sarah continues her series on collaborations with two of the great names in classic British cinema, Powell and Pressburger, and Sarah is in our Limerick studio. Let's start with who are we talking about when we talk about Powell and Pressburger, Sarah?
Yeah, well, we couldn't really be talking about two more different individuals. Michael Powell was born in Canterbury in Kent in 1905 and got his way into films by doing a series of what they called quickies at that time in the early 1900s, which were kind of hour-long films that were just to satisfy a legal requirement that there'd be a certain quota of British movies on the screen at the time. And Emmerich Pressburger was Hungarian, got his start in the movies in Berlin as a scriptwriter, and then had to flee Germany because he was Jewish when Hitler came into power, fled to Paris, and then had to flee. Things kind of got a bit hairy there and ended up in the UK. And the two of them met under the film producer Korda at the time, and who kind of put them together in their first collaboration. And at that time, it was Michael Powell as director and Pressburger as scriptwriter. But then they came together and formed their own production company, I suppose you'd call it, called The Archers. And they were so unique in their time. I mean, I don't really know of another partnership in film like it, where every film that they made, I think they made 13 films together under the banner of The Archers.
The Archers was this production company of their own.
Yeah, so you'd see that, you see it at the beginning of all of their big movies. You see this big thing, The Archers, an Archers production. But not only that, you also see following that, written, directed and produced by crediting them both, Michael Powell and Emmerich Pressburger.
But
they
that,
never really liked to discuss the division of labour in those roles.
Well, they mightn't have liked it, but I want to do it. Was it very demarcated, in fact? Or did they really collaborate across all three
activities? They really did, except for the fact Michael Powell was the director, and as he said himself, like, he was the one directing on the floor, on the studio floor, because you can't have two people doing that.
And although the Coen brothers might argue differently,
that's
and a few others might.
Yeah, and actually it's a similar thing, because they're working from the inside. And Pressburger, you know, was really, if you had to divide it, the script writer. But as they said themselves, like, they were so lucky. They were making films at such an unusual time during the war, but yet they had this incredible freedom. And so they were writing together from an idea. You know, they weren't the type of filmmakers that were handed a script. They might have been handed a kind of, oh, we'd like you to make something like this, because actually they made propaganda films, essentially. But there was a huge collaboration in the script writing phase. And even though Michael Powell was the one telling the actors what to do, Emmerich Pressburger was always there in the background. Yeah, there was always a constant discussion.
So it really was that type of collaboration. But let's just go back to this idea of propaganda, because we are talking of really, things were at their best for them. I think their first collaboration was in 1939, but the 40s were vital for them.
It really was. Yeah, they met their best works during that time. Yeah,
the life and death of Colonel Blimp was important in terms of propaganda in particular, wasn't it?
It was. Because it was an interesting one, because it was Churchill tried to have the film banned, essentially, and when he couldn't, he tried to do everything to make it a flop.
It was poking fun, really, at Britain's military leaders. That's what it was doing at the time.
It kind of was. And even though Pressburger said, because he had an awful fondness for his newfound home of England and he remained there, but it was the old way of doing things and the seriousness of World War II. So it follows this Colonel Rogers, played by Roger Livesley, who was amazing, who kind of fought in all the world wars. But by the time it gets to World War II, his ideas are outdated. And it's also about his friendship with a German officer. And Pressburger, in particular, had this big thing throughout many of their films that he wanted to separate the idea of Germans and Nazis.
Right.
And so it was quite controversial to have this friendship between an English officer and a German officer.
And a sympathetic portrayal of a German officer.
A sympathetic portrayal. Like, he's really kind of the hero who saves this colonel from his old way of thinking. And so, yeah, it was kind of poking fun at this, look, this old way of doing things, like sportsmanship and goodliness will get us through World War II. And this this German character played by Anton Warbeck basically comes to him at the end and says, you don't understand the seriousness of the Nazis, and they will use anything at their disposal. Unless you kind of meet them at that level, you're going to lose this war. But despite all of that, like Churchill having to try have a band, like the film was a huge success.
Yeah. Let's move along into, I suppose, when things were, 1943 was Colonel Blimp, A Canterbury Tale was the following year, which was another significant film for them. But A Matter of Life and Death, I think, is one of the ones that you've chosen that we might speak about this evening. David Niven.
It's an extraordinary film.
Extraordinary setup here.
Extraordinary setup. And actually, to say also about kind of making these types of films, they were kind of commissioned by the Ministry of Information in the UK as well on this one. And this was, when you see, if you ever get to see the film, which I wholly encourage you to do, the premise that they were given was to soften relations, Anglo-American relations, because as the war was coming to an end, America and the UK had fought together, but they were kind of slagging each other off a bit towards the end of the war. So this film was meant to kind of soften relations between the two. And David Niven, interesting enough, who fought in the war himself, finished his service in the war. He says at midnight, before they started shooting the scene, which I'm going to describe for you now, the next day. So he plays an officer who is about to die. His aircraft is about to crash, and he's on a radio control officer to June, an American woman, who's trying to get him to land. And he said, look, there's no hope, I'm going to crash. And these are his final moments. And essentially, it's the most beautiful love story nearly in cinema, because they fall in love over the radio waves in these, in this man's essentially last few moments. And then the next scene we see is David Niven walking out of this cold water somewhere in an English seaside, and he's alive against all odds. He shouldn't be. And that was the first shot. David Niven said, I got out of the war at midnight the night before, and the next day I was in the water shooting this shot. But there's been a mistake.
Yeah, so let's listen then to what happens. David Niven is here, squadron leader Peter David Carter, and as he wakes up, he encounters Conductor 71, who starts to explain to him what's going on. Conductor 71, played by Marius Goring.
Who are you?
We should have met yesterday at 0410, mon cher. Unfortunately, I missed you.
Well, you couldn't have missed me because I wasn't here. Now, who the...
I bring you a message from Mr. Trubshaw.
Bob? Bob's dead.
Oh, yes. He's dead. He says, what ho?
Well, that sounds like Trubshaw. But he is dead, isn't he?
En effet. But how?
Cannon shell.
And what should happen to a man who jumps from his aircraft without his parachute?
How do you know?
But it is I who am telling you, my friend. Your time was up. But they missed you because of your ridiculous English climate.
But what do you want now?
You, my friend.
What for?
To conduct you to the training center.
Training for what?
For another world.
You don't mean...
But my dear friend, that is just what I do mean.
Marius Goring there as Conductor 71, David Niven as Squadron Leader Peter David Carter in the Powell and Pressburger film A Matter of Life and Death, and Sarah Kenny speaking to us about the collaborations of Powell and Pressburger this evening. I suppose one of the important things in that film, Sarah, is the whole, this idea of, alongside this very real world, and we're in a post-World War world as well, is this kind of fantasy world.
Yeah.
And that's something that grows over the next couple of years in their movies.
Yeah, that was always prevalent. I think this fantastical flights of fancy and melodrama, and then this vibrant use of technicolor. Interestingly, they kind of did a flip on The Wizard of Oz in this film, where this world that he finds himself in, the real world, shall we say, Earth, is shot in technicolor, and the afterlife, which it's never referred to, actually, I think, interestingly, as heaven or God is never mentioned, is in black and white, whereas we might have thought it would be the other way around.
Yeah. Let me move on to Black Narcissus from 1947, because it's not the only film that does this, but it shows how Powell and Pressburger could write great females and present great female roles. Deborah Kerr being one of the important ones here.
Yeah, very unusual for that time. Like, this is essentially like a female-led cast and a female-led story, and you know that those kind of strong female characters were prevalent throughout their films, and they weren't always, as they aren't in Black Narcissus, the ingenue, which they might have been scene at that time. So, like, here we have another kind of controversial film. Apparently the Vatican weren't too happy about it because it's about an order of nuns, the Sisters of St. Faith, who Deborah Kerr is charged with kind of bringing the order out into this really unique setting up very high in the Himalayas to start a convent where they'll kind of try and immerse themselves in the local community. And basically it becomes this film about suppressed desire. Something happens, all of the nuns, when they get there. It's also another trademark of Paul and Pressburger films, that the landscape and this kind of element of the fantasy that you talked about become intertwined. So they all become almost hypnotised by the landscape. There is a character in it that they say David Farrer takes
Mr Dean,
that one of the nuns amazingly played, Sister Ruth, amazingly played by Kathleen Byron, who she thinks her obsession is with him.
Let's listen to a clip where Deborah Kerr as Sister Clodagh, the superior in the convent here, you wouldn't want to be in the convent with this woman around you, Sister Clodagh. And she's telling Sister Ruth, played by Kathleen Byron, warning her about this obsession with Mr. Dean.
Listen to me. I don't know. I can't decide now what to make of you. I shall have to think. And I want you to think too. As for Mr. Dean, in spite of his charm and kindliness, he is not a good man. You must take him for what he is and not try to glorify him into something he is not. When he came to chapel on Christmas night, he was drunk. Can I go? I want you to write to Reverend Mother. I shan't look at the letter, and her reply will be your own business.
Am I to write 2 or 3 pages? Would you rather I did it now, or shall I finish my classwork first?
You may go.
Yeah, dramatic stuff indeed. And that's Deborah Kerr and Kathleen Byron there in a scene from Black Narcissus, the Paul and Pressburger film of 1947. I know Sarah Kenny is speaking to us about Paul and Pressburger this evening. I've had to hold you back from The Red Shoes because that's the one we're going to finish up talking about. A great female central role essential to this as well in the person of Moira Shearer playing Victoria Page. But it's the Red Shoes themselves and the use of colour that are so vital in this film, really, and the use of music.
Extremely so, yeah. And I have to say, it's one of my favourite films of all time. I mean, they took so many risks. It's so unusual to have a 17-minute ballet sequence
in the midst of it, yeah.
Right in the heart of the film. The only other film that has it is An American in Paris, actually, which was made a couple of years later. The film is about whether a woman or anybody should have to choose between love or their career, and particularly a career in the arts. And actually this idea that we have, that a career in the arts, like, how far do you have to go to be the best, you know?
Yeah. Well, let's listen to Victoria Page, played by Moira Shearer, as you say, and Anton Walbrook is playing the part of the ballet company leader Boris Lermontov, and the whole debate here is around the position of work in this woman's life.
Thank you. Where, it appears, to be treated to a little dancing exhibition. But now I understand we're to be spared that horror.
Mr. Lermontov, I am that horror.
It's a bit late for apologies, isn't it?
Yes, a little late, I think.
All the same, I'm sorry. I'm terribly sorry.
But you're not sorry I didn't dance, are you?
Oh.
May I ask why?
And because, my dear Miss
Victoria Page.
My dear Miss Page, if I accept an invitation to a party, I do not expect to find myself at an audition.
Yes, you're quite right.
Why do you want to dance?
Why do you want to live?
I don't know exactly why, but I must.
That's my answer, too.
Moira Shearer there as Victoria Page and Anton Walbrook as Boris Lermontov in The Red Shoes, a Paul and Pressburger film. The shoes themselves, obviously the Hans Christian Andersen tale is essential to the telling of this, and that's the fantasy part again, Sarah.
Yeah, so it does this constant crossover. So the ballet that Lermontov ends up making then with the Moira Shearer character is the ballet of The Red Shoes. So that's the 17-minute dance sequence within that. So there is The Red Shoes issues, ballet shoes that the character then has in her arsenal.
Yeah.
But really then at the heart of the story in the background becomes this love story between her and the composer, and the fact that Lermontov can't stand his prized possession.
I suppose this was the height of Powell and Pressburger's period. It really started, it eased off after that, and they ended up penniless, didn't they?
They did, and actually now we hold it up as this great cinema classic and particularly one of their best, but at the time it wasn't a success, and actually their funder kind of backed out. He'd kind of backed all their experiments and their
But this was the straw that broke the camel's back.
It wasn't until years later, and actually it's Martin Scorsese that kind of they basically went into nearly abject poverty, the pair of them, and a lot of it had to do with Michael Powell making a film in the 60s called Peeping Tom, which is now hailed as a classic, but was it's quite a very unusual film, almost like it's a thriller horror kind of, but it didn't go down well, and they were kind of living in abject poverty, and Scorsese basically he kind of talks about Powell more than Powell and Pressburger as getting him into directing. He remembers seeing The Red Shoes like age 10 or something with his dad in the cinema, and this was his light bulb moment, and the two ended up becoming friends then in the 70s, and Scorsese then introduced him actually to his wife, who is Thelma Schoonmaker, who's Scorsese's long term collaborator. She edits most of his films, 20 years Powell's junior, but that's where he spent the last kind of 20 years of his life, and for Powell and Pressburger, they saw this resurgence of their films, which is great.
Yeah.
They mightn't have got the money for it. And Scorsese and Thelma Schoonmaker are now involved in kind of restoring Powell and Pressburger's entire archive. They've dedicated like a slice of their career to doing that.
Sarah Kenny there speaking to me about the cinematic collaborations of Michael Powell and Emmerich Pressburger, and bringing Tuesday Night's Arena to a close.